Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional. It is time right now for House Calls Vermont. Hosts Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. A program brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. By R.K. Miles, Allen Lumber.
R.K. Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber, there's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. Poly Construction in South Burlington, one call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Now, House Calls Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Good day, everybody. This is Jim Bradley, and I'm here with Chris West.
How's it going, guys?
We are here, and we'd like to welcome you, new listeners and old, returning ones. And right now, just once again, as Joel said, please feel free to call in with any questions you may have regarding your do-it-yourself projects, your projects that you're considering for new construction, and if you're looking to hire a professional, what you should be asking, what questions you should be asking, to the number of 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255.
Yeah, before we get into the show, we just wanted to send out our feelings and our hopes that Ken Squire has a speedy recovery from his COVID. Our thoughts are with you, Ken. Get better soon.
And with that, this week, as we've been progressing through the last few weeks, the ABCs of air sealing, this week we're going to be discussing the Cs of air sealing. And that's not the high Cs, and that's not the low Cs, like a bad test grade, but instead it's going to be the middle Cs, the central areas or conditioned spaces of your home, and how that relates to your overall comfort and possible energy savings. Chris, what would you consider the conditioned space to be, and how can you tell the difference?
So, my favorite way of testing if you're in the conditioned space is, are you in a space where you can look out a window that isn't in the basement, right? If you're in the basement and you're looking out a window, you're in the basement. That's clear. But if you're in a conditioned space, you're heating it and you can look out of a window and you're warm, right? You're not in an attic space with a window. You're not in a basement space. That's the conditioned space.
And so with the conditioned spaces, there are a lot of areas. I mean, a lot of areas. As I sat down, I first thought about, well, Chris, are we going to have enough?
I thought that was hilarious. Jim is like, we're not going to have enough to talk about. And then he sends me 3 pages of notes on the conditioned space.
Well, after 30 years of looking at these things, you start to think, oh, what about that one? And, well, maybe that one too. But what it does mean is that there are several areas of opportunities. As a homeowner, if you're willing, you can do yourself and affect some really good change. You know, when it comes to the attic and in the basement, usually, as we've said the last couple weeks,
those are the areas where it is more important for you to look at having possibly a professional to achieve. But the central areas of the home or the conditioned spaces, those are usually low technical areas where you can do some simple caulking and air sealing and really affect some really great change. Some things to consider about that, though, Chris, if you would.
So the first thing that we talk about when we're talking about the air sealing is the ABCs, right? Attic, basement, and conditioned spaces. Things we need to consider are those convective pathways, right? We said that the stack effect, right? Warm air rises, pushes against leaky holes in your attic, go out of your top pressure plane, the ceiling in your on your top floor, into the cold Vermont winter, that causes a lack of air or low pressure in the house that gets reinfiltrated in the basement. And we've been talking about that. And it reinfiltrates in the basement because the pressure differential is greatest at the lowest point of the house, right? But when we're talking about the conditioned
spaces, there are lots of opportunities that we have to look at. Those chimneys, there are actual chimneys going through your house from your basement all the way up, which is why we say we have to cap that off at the attic.
When you're saying chimney, though, you're talking about a pathway for the
air. Right,
to
I'm
move.
Not talking. Well, sometimes it's an actual chimney.
Well, true, an abandoned
we have,
one.
We have these fun ones we call chimneys and chimneys, which is where you have a chimney in the house, and then they build a chase around the chimney that goes from the basement all the way up, and that is a huge pathway for air and adds to the stack effect and how it depressurizes the house.
And so sometimes, you know, you'll see that there's air leakage at exterior walls, but also interior walls through light switches, through sometimes your door latches. When we put a blower door on the house and begin to depressurize it, you can put your hand up to the latch and feel air coming through, not just from the outside, but also from the inside of the home, which tells us it behind the scenes, though it looks like it's completely finished, nice trim, nice sheetrock, but behind the scenes, we have air movement. So we need to seal off those areas or pathways for that movement. What I liken it to, and I tell our customers this, is that think of a drinking straw. If you have two holes on a drinking straw, one end and then the other, water or whatever can pass through. Air can pass through. If you plug up one of those ends, then it's not going to flow. So as many of these holes that you can plug up, you're going to diminish or mitigate that stack effect potential and thus make the home more comfortable.
So what are the things we're wondering about? One of the problems with doing some of this work in a brand new house is that we don't have any reporting back from the person who lives there. And a person is a very, very sensitive device for testing if it's cold or if it's drafty. You're much more sensitive than most of the instrumentation we'd put in to test your house. And there are other creatures in your house that also have that. We have what we call spiders, and spiders create their webs in areas where there are drafts, because as they evolved, they learned that things fly by, and if you build your nest, you build your web in a place where things are flying by, you're going to get food. So we know that if you have cobwebs dancing in your house, that's an indication that you have an air leakage.
That's why the big scary basement is usually because you have a lot of air coming back into the house from the basement, and those cobwebs just build up because, as Chris said, spiders are smart.
We were in a house just 3 weeks ago where we went into the basement, and the homeowner was like, we haven't had anybody in the basement for 2 or 3 years. You could not walk 2 feet without being completely – it was like one of those horror films in the basement there. And that was all air leakage. That was telling the spiders, there's air coming through here. At some point, there's going to be food coming through here. So if we use those as a very scientific but not very high-tech way of finding drafts in your house.
Well, in another area we see that, too, is let's say you have some ceiling areas where there's cracks in the drywall or the plaster, or we'll see that there's some crown molding in place, but then there's cobwebs around it. If you do a little bit further investigation, you're going to find that there is air movement through those areas. Many times we'll see that people will put crown molding up, and as a labor-saving effort, they will not seal the joint between the wall and the ceiling. They just cover it up with crown molding with no caulking. Well, behind the scenes, that's where the air is infiltrating and exfiltrating through.
Why do we care? Why do we care if air is coming through your walls around gaps in the construction?
What's in that air, Chris?
What's in that air? Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago with what's in your walls, right? So if you have insulation in your walls, 99% of the time that's going to be a fiberglass bat that was not installed properly. When you install insulation, there are three levels of installation of the insulation. Class 3 is gaps of up to or more than a quarter inch anywhere around the perimeter of where that one is installed. Class 2 is between, I think it's an eighth of an inch and a half inch. And then when you get to class 1, that it is perfectly installed. That's not just gaps, but whether it's been compressed and hasn't spun back to fill the entire cavity. And remember what we said about what insulates. What insulates is trapped air. If you have air in your, say, a stud bay, and that's full of fiberglass, that's nothing wrong with that. However, if that outside wall is air leaky so that wind can blow through it, your trapped air in that insulation, which is what is the R value, the insulative value of that insulation, gets what we call wind washed, where the outside air blows the insulation, that air, warm air that's trapped in that insulation out, and then you've got outside temperature in your insulation, which is not insulative at all. It reduces the insulation capacity of that insulation or insulative capacity all the way down to that outside air.
And so as that air from the outside, the inside of the home is getting to the outside or inside that exterior wall bay, it is carrying more moisture with it, and it's usually going to be warmer. Then it gets into that cavity, that wall cavity, and it hits the exterior sheathing, and then that's usually much colder, and it starts to drop the moisture because, you know, colder air can't carry as much moisture, so it releases that moisture into the insulation. And once insulation, specifically fiberglass, gets wet, it then becomes more of a conductor, and it starts to shrink up a little bit and compress. And thus, when it dries out again, the same R value or resistance to heat or cold loss is going to then diminish, and so it's not going to be as effective. So add to that 20, 30 years or more of a life cycle of that insulation, it's never going to be performing the way it did before. That's why stopping that air from ever getting into that space in the first place, and usually through a real easy pathway around the edges of the sheetrock, around trim pieces, whatever, sealing those doesn't cost a lot. It's a pretty easy skill level to address, and it'll be very effective for your home.
One concept that we haven't talked about at all up to this point, but is really, really relevant to this particular topic, is vapor drive. Most people understand air movement. Air moves from a place of high pressure to low pressure. We understand
wind,
right? We understand temperature moving, right? Temperature moves from a concentration of higher temperatures to a concentration of lower temperatures. So you're getting a basic idea. Nature likes balance. So it's going to try to take a high anything and a low anything and move them into the middle where there is no pressure, say, from one to the other. The same thing happens with vapor. And there are two seasons in Vermont where vapor drive is important. Whenever you have a high vapor concentration in one area and a low vapor concentration in another, that vapor will move without any wind, without any other type of mechanism, will move itself through all kinds of, as a gas, right? We're talking about water vapor, gaseous water, can move through a wall and deposit itself inside a wall. So there are two. One is the winter, where outside the relative humidity is very, very low, and inside, where we're keeping that relative humidity between 30 and 60% relative humidity, because that's where we like it, that vapor will actually move through your sheetrock into your wall, and it will deposit on what's called the first condensing layer. The first condensing layer is whatever solid material is below the dew point. And it can hit that and then either turn right into water and then into ice, depending on the temperature, or into water and stay in your wall. That's why we try to make the walls vapor open. So in the summer, when it's more moist outside than it is inside, we have a flipping of the vapor drive, and that drying potential can then be taken advantage of to get that moisture out of the wall. It's okay to get moisture in your wall as long as it gets out of there at the same amount during the flip of the season.
And as Chris is alluding to, vapor drive is hugely important. One of the ways, though, that moisture is actually transported more aggressively is going to be through an airstream.
Yep.
And so if you have multiple penetrations, so let's say you look at one wall cavity. You can have a piece of baseboard near the floor, and air is allowed to go up and through the sheetrock that way. Then you come up and you have a plug, you know, electrical plug. Then above that, you have a light switch. And above that, you may have a wall sconce. And then above that, you may have a piece of crown molding. My gosh, it's riddled with holes. It's like a Swiss cheese of a wall assembly. And air is moving readily through that. And then once it does, you're going to get more moisture in there. And as Chris alluded to, yes, you get more water in there. Then you can get icing in there, which you usually do. And then after that, you're going to get possibly mold.
Yep.
And that's why controlling these areas, they're easier to achieve, but they're very, very effective for what you're trying to have the whole, how you want the house to perform.
A 1-inch hole in a wall, if you take all the little 1/4-inch or 1/8 inch gaps around a socket, for instance, and that makes 1 inch, with this normal relative humidity inside of a house, you can deposit up to 30 liters of water in a season through that little gap. And if you were to seal all those gaps and only have diffusion, so not air moving through and bring that moisture, you get that down to a couple of tablespoons, right? And it, obviously less is more in this particular situation.
So with that, I think that we're at time for a break, but when we come back, we will be discussing a little bit further on how to actually seal some of these areas and what are the tools that you should be looking to utilize. So in the meantime, should you have any questions regarding your home performance projects, your building projects, or just various questions on the structure of the home or other items, please give us a call at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Time to refresh the look of your home or business? Call Shamrock Painting Company. With over 45 years of experience, you can trust Shamrock Painting Company for accurate estimates, thorough surface preparation, high-quality materials, respect for your space, and a finished product that looks great and performs well with a one-year warranty. Their spacious Northfield shop is ideal for pre-finishing cabinets, trim and doors, and fine finishing wood products and furniture of all types. Fully insured, local delivery, national shipping. Family-owned, Shamrock Painting Company. ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. At Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, they carry Apex tools like Nicholson files and Crescent adjustable wrenches. The original and still the best. They are your headquarters for all the winter projects around your home, inside and out. From paint, windows, doors, flooring, insulation, kitchen cabinets, and a huge selection of Apex tools. Stop in and find the perfect Apex tool for the handyman on your holiday list. Or pick up a gift card at any of their five locations. Middlesex, St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, and Derby. Or online at sticksandstuff.com.
Haven't you always wanted a contractor that you can trust? 30 years ago, Stephen Polly started Polly Construction with the idea that every homeowner needs that trusted contractor. Remodeling, new construction, decks, windows, anything construction. One call does it all. And for a small job that no one else will touch, Handyman by Polly. PollyConstruction.com. That's P-O-L-L-I Construction.com.
RK Miles is your neighborhood lumberyard. Now with new locations in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield, RK Miles is a third-generation, family-owned business offering lumber and building materials, doors and windows, kitchen and bath design, and so much more. It's time for your project. Stop by one of our four new stores or visit our Stowe or Morrisville locations to get started. Go to rkmiles.com to learn more and to find a location near you.
WDEV also serves the Northeast Kingdom at 101.9 W270BR Island Pond.
Okay, we're back from the break. Thank you very much for listening to our sponsors. We need them in order to make this all work. I did want to point something out. We've been listening to that disclaimer that was put together and at the very beginning of the show. And one of the things it says is make sure that you get things checked out by a licensed professional.
A what?
A licensed professional. There are no licensures in Vermont for builders. It's something that we've been looking at and working on a number of different levels. Through the Vermont Home Builders and Remodelers Association, going to Capitol Hill here in the state and talking with people about that and how to phase that in and make sense. Once again, in New Hampshire, they call Vermont the Wild West. If you're a plumber, you need a license. If you're an electrician, you need a license.
An elevator installer.
But no builder. I mean, any of you could start a construction company tomorrow just by paying your $50 to the Secretary of State. Start a company, grab a hammer, and start building according to the state. So finding a licensed professional that's a builder in Vermont is a non-sequitur.
That's why we're trying to give you some of the correct questions to ask when you're looking for a professional so that you're more informed and really know how to drive the conversation.
Yeah, we have Steve Spatz from Efficiency Vermont visiting us as he regularly does on Saturdays. Hey, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. It's interesting. You know, we're talking about the C's or central conditioned areas of the home for air sealing and how this is more in the lines of what a DIY person could do on their own. And yet, I was at the hardware store before the show, had to pick up some things for a customer's home and saw the brochure that said Efficiency Vermont offering rebates back for DIY projects. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. Yeah, our DIY program is a way to try to give homeowners the benefit of getting a little bit of money back on and some guidance as well on investing in some of these things you guys are talking about in the home. So the DIY program is set up in a way that we have 10 different projects that are listed on our website and in a brochure if you find one in one of our hardware stores that are helping to promote the program. And you complete 3 of those 10 projects and fill out a rebate form and send it in to us. We'll give you $100 back for the investment that you've made.
And to help increase the skill level of that individual, Efficiency Vermont, correct, is still offering some of the button-up courses online?
Button-up is wrapping up for the most part here now in the communities that were participating in it for this year. But part of what is available on the website is a ton of DIY resources.
Excellent.
And ways to not only just learn some stuff through videos and content that we have online, but, again, ways to connect with our partner contractors in the program that are trained in these areas that can help guide you as well.
And my understanding, I may not have this right, Steve, so please correct me, but these programs will be reset once the fiscal year restarts, and you guys will be putting that information out as well, right?
Yep. The DIY program will be carrying through and forward into 2021, home performance program as well. We are just finalizing where our incentive amounts are going to be at for those programs for next year. Right now it's Department of Public Service, so we're starting a new contract term with them. So that information is currently available to our contractors, and we'll start to be able to get that info out to customers through contractors as well and on our website soon.
Great. Do you want to give us that website information so our callers can jot that down?
Sure. Just go to efficiencyvermont.com, and at the top of the page, easiest way to get there is to go to rebates and then choose insulation, air sealing in the drop-down menu, and residential. And then you'll see the different offers, so that'll give you the information on the home performance program as well as the DIY program. And then on the DIY page, you'll see related content on the resources, the videos, the how-to things, the guidance areas.
Excellent. Well, Steve, thank you again for joining us this week, and we look forward to talking in the weeks coming up here as well.
Next week is indoor air quality.
A very important subject, for
sure.
So have a great weekend, Steve.
All right, guys. You too. Take care.
Yep. And right now we have a call from Ted in Shelburne. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes, hi. Thanks very much. I think your last few words will work with what my question is, and that is the need for heat exchanging as you with all of your ceiling, which is fine, and my house has enough air probably, but I built an accessory apartment which is very tight, and you want to bring some air in and not bring it in cold. So you have, and this is where you have to buy something and product information, because it's not a do-it-yourself, but you need to pull in some air and get the cold out of it, so you're not having to heat all of the air exchange. So that's just a topic, and it sounds like next week might be that one coming in, but it's quite important if you don't want to totally live with all of that air that you have sealed in.
That's right. No, that's a very good point. Thank you for bringing that up. It's what Ted is talking about is what we call balanced ventilation, right? So there are two types. We were going to speak to that earlier today, and we are going to speak to that in depth next week. But if we're bringing in air, whether that air is being brought in because we're using exhaust ventilation, which once again depressurizes and causes reinfiltration through the gaps in your walls and all that type of thing, that air is all the same temperature as the outside air.
Simply put, what you push out of the house is going to want to come back in and balance it out. And you either want it to come through a known spot that's going to be clean air, that's going to be able to get some of that heat back by going across a heat exchanger, or it's going to come out in on its own from areas you don't want to breathe that air through.
So very simply, what Ted is referring to is a heat recovery ventilation system. There are two types. There's an HRV, which is heat recovery. The other is called an ERV, which is enthalpy recovery, which is also called energy. The difference between the two, one does not allow moisture to cross over the heat exchanger, and one does. And in our climate, if you have an HRV, you're probably going to be super drying out your air. I had that at my house. I swapped out my HRV to ERV. Because the ERV allows for some of that moisture that's in the air, the stale air in your house that you're putting through the heat exchanger, to go over to the incoming air stream. So how does this work? Well, we have stale air in the house, and that stale air has got heat in it. And instead of just blowing that out and taking outside air at outside temperatures and bringing that in, what it does is it sends the stale air through a heat exchanger and has the fresh air coming through and going past that stale air, where it transfers, depending on the type of core, heat, but also sometimes with the ERV, heat and moisture. And that means that we're able to recapture. So let me give you an idea. If it's 0 degrees out and you're using extract-only ventilation, you're blowing out air and you're sucking in air at 0 degrees.
You're blowing out money.
Money. And if you have an ERV, let's say that it's a 70% efficient core, which means that if it's 70 degrees in your house and it's 0 degrees outside, you're bringing in that air around 57 degrees, and that is much easier to heat air from 57 to 70 than it is from 0 to 70. So it's a huge savings in energy, but also in comfort.
And with that, you know, as Ted was alluding to, is why this is so important. Some people will balk. Old school builders will balk. You know, just will say, hey, you're making the house too tight. Well, that's true if you're making it really tight, but and you're not dealing with the ventilation source. And even right now, as the codes have changed over the last few years, currently the Residential Building Energy Standards requires that new construction that your house is 3 air changes per hour or less. And with that, some builders are doing a great job of tightening things up, but they're getting under 1 air change per hour and not putting anything in there for heat recovery. Or
how tight is too tight? What is the rule? Oddly enough, how tight is... Yeah, sorry, Ted, say...
I'll throw just one more sentence in. Just particularly now with the COVID-19 situation, and it's more vital in schools, but where this needs to be addressed is to get those kids with fresh air, not all of their neighbors' air that they're breathing.
Absolutely.
And to some degree, that would be the same in your house. I'll hang up. I thank you very much.
Thank you calling, Ted. And if you do have thank you for bringing that up. And if you have a question relating to that next week, please call in.
And honestly, when the insurance companies, health insurance companies, get a hold of this reality, and they are starting to, and realizing, and they're actually connecting the dots and realizing that fresh air ventilation is so important to your overall health and well-being, they're going to help incentivize this measure. And you don't just have to have new construction to put one of these units in. There are plenty of items that are coming to market right now to address renovation work. And I've done 2 of those in my house. It's a Zender unit. And we can tell when they're not running, because the indoor air quality certainly changes. You can just tell the air is more static and stale. But even with that, I think I mentioned before that we did tests with a CO2 monitor.
Yep.
And found out that without the units on, then in the master bedroom with the door closed, we were running close to 4,000 parts per million of CO2. Well, what does that mean? You really want it to be 1,000 parts per million or less. And if you get above that mark, then you're going to not sleep as well. You're not going to sleep as deeply. You'll be more irritable, and it really starts to affect your overall well-being. So it does become a very important component of the performance of the home.
And we'll be getting deep into the study that Jim is talking about, which was a part of both of our houses were a part of that, and we were working with Brian Just from Efficiency Vermont on that. We have Forbes in Corinth on the line. Forbes, how can we help you?
Thing under the roof area, a build-up roof or panelized with insulation.
Okay.
Is what's the life expectancy of blue board, and what's the best way to do it?
That's interesting. Blue board. If it's against your foundation and someone continues to use a weed eater, it's not going to last too long. If it's exposed to sunlight, it's going to also degrade very quickly. If it goes subterranean and it's going to have a lot of hydraulic water pressure, it's going to take up water slowly, but it will not want to release it. And so after 10 years, we have found that you have 2-inch insulation board on your outside walls. and then it'll hold up to an inch of water. Then it becomes more of a conductor than an insulator.
You've lost half of a yard value there.
There is the Green Building Advisor that did a study a few years back and showed the performance of blue board, pink board, green board, i.e. XPS or extruded polystyrene, at the 15-year mark, has lost half of its performance value, just even in an enclosed environment. So you may have an R15, or let's say 1 inch of it would be an R5. Right. You may have that today, but you go out 15 years of it just being in place because it's lost some of its initial blowing agents or gases inside the closed cells, because they will leave, they will evacuate the component. Then it drops down to an R2.5. So that money that you invested is not getting you the same performance.
So the question, you're talking attic, and I just want to get a better idea of where you wanted to throw this board. You want to put it on top, like pull off whatever roof sheet?
Yeah, I would say inaccessible to get to the roof area internally to insulate, and you want to put a build-up roof with insulation on it. 2x4s on end, blue board in between, then metal roofing on top.
Yeah. So I'd like to know more about what the assembly is below that, because that dew point thing is a really important bit here. Tell me, you said it was a panelized system. Is it, just tell me what you know about the existing roof.
Well, that would be, actually the panelization would be built up, doing it physically, not made on the ground and then installed.
Got it.
Water and ice, down first, and then the 2x4s on end.
Right, but what's the existing roof? Well, not the proposed roof.
Right.
No, what he was asking is there a roof? Okay, so you have your roof assembly. Is there a space below that? Is there going to be an attic space below that, or is that living space right below that roof assembly?
No, that's an attic below and inaccessible.
So what you'd be doing by building up this roof and putting insulation above on that roof plane, you actually increase the heated volume or conditioned space of the home, because that attic then becomes it is placed inside the thermal barrier by the way you're going to be building that assembly. It doesn't mean that's wrong. It just, I want you to realize that that's kind of where you're going with this. If you're doing a built-up assembly, one thing you have to consider is structural issues, because you could put 10, 20 inches of some type of rigid insulation up there, but how is it fastening? How's that roof fastening to it? Are you going to have an assembly that allows for framing materials that you can put screws through that will effectively hold it, and there's no issue with shear factor or any other items that may come up? Typically, what we have done is that inside the rafter bays, we have placed insulation. Yes, we've built that up, and we would use either a rigid board, like a polyisocyanurate, or polyiso, people call it, or possibly an EPS. But we're also doing a project presently in a renovation for the company I work for with Hayward Design Build, that we're using rigid rock wool insulation, and that is very effective, and I like it because it does not lose its efficacy or performance value after time either, and so that's why we choose that. Chris,
So moving, first of all, if you're going to do if you're moving the thermal envelope and you're going to be going above this attic and you're going to be encapsulating all of that in, you're required by the state code, the Residential Building Energy Standard, to do a minimum of R50. So if we're going to be adding insulation to the roof, this is a tricky one. We don't want to make a dead space, right, where there's no ventilation going into what is now a vented attic. And we don't want to create any thermal bridging. Like you were saying, lay down the 2x4s, put the blue board between them. That is not an assembly that we would get behind. We'd have to take a look specifically at where the house is now and what the goals are. So what Jim and I are recommending here is that you give us an email, send us an email to housecallsvt@gmail.com. We'll talk a little offline about exactly what's going on with your assembly, and we'll be able to give you better information, because there's like 10 questions that we have to ask before we can give you really good advice on this.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Forbes.
And right now we have Jim calling in to Jim and Chris. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, what a great show this is. I got hooked on it last week when you guys were talking about sweating windows and energy efficient windows and stuff like that.
Great.
I've had three different carpenters put in three different types of windows. And yes, I understand that there are no licenses for carpenters, but all these brand new windows sweat and puddle, and I get these wicked puddles all around my house. Now, my question to you is, can you recommend, or is there, I already have a DeLonghi Energy Star dehumidifier, which doesn't seem to be doing much. Are there any other brands that don't raise pain with your electric bill?
I have that just sends off some questions in my head. I'd like to know. So, Windows. I was just answering an email question for a listener before I came to the studio today, and there are two bits to a window, right? One is, what is the R value of that window? If you have an R value, most of the Marvins, the Anderson Super Low E's, a lot of the Pellas, they top out at an R4, right? And your wall is probably an R20 plus. So your windows are always going to be your weak spot. Sorry?
I wonder if these carpenters even know about the R value, because these are Harvey and Marvins,
yeah,
and they're all sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
Even
so, do you
reaction rise the house?
Yeah. Do you have a high relative humidity in the house? So you have a lot of fish tanks? Do you have a
growing plants?
We had a woman who was putting 7 gallons of water into her plants every day, and wondering why she was getting condensation.
And it depends on the number of occupants in the home, because a normal person will just by breathing
15
will release
liters a day. Some
One to three liters a day. Then you have cooking, you have showering, and all those things raise that. So using a simple but a good quality, because they can vary greatly in their readings, but a good quality humidity sensor or hygrometer, not just the one that's on your dehumidifier, but one that you actually have as a standalone. Do you have something like that?
Yeah, Community Action gave me 3, and one reads 65, and the others are about 50, 54.
So 65 is high.
Yes.
50, 54, those sound perfectly okay. So what's happening is you've been putting in a window. Do you have radiators under your windows?
Yes.
Okay.
Hot water based.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So the reason we put radiators under windows is because, pardon my French, but windows are really bad at thermal stuff. So it seems to me like you are dealing with now I can't say for sure because I don't know enough. That 65% relative humidity is high. So we'd like to find out what's creating that high relative humidity. But even at 50% relative humidity, if you're seeing condensation on a cold day, the reason is because the R value of the window is not high enough. The windows that we've been installing in houses are R7, R8 windows.
And not just that, they have the triple pane.
Triple pane. So this is, and they're not significantly more expensive than a Marvin or a Pella. Those windows have thermally broken frames, and themselves the glazing is thermally broken. So you're going to have a much higher interior surface temperature of the window, where you won't get condensation, even with a slightly higher relative humidity.
If I may, I have evolved in this whole building science world, if you will, over the past
Wait a second. When I sent Jim to take the Passivhaus builder, he called me up almost weeping, because he was like, are you broken me? I know things I shouldn't know.
Yeah, because as a builder, I always want to educate myself so I can offer this type of knowledge to our customers, and we want to do the right thing. We don't want to come back later and said, why did we listen to that salesperson? So with that, we would want to make sure that we're looking at the right type of windows. And so when I first did the renovation or built a new structure onto my house, I put in double hung units, but they were good quality double hung, and they sweat all the time. I saw it this morning, and they're a vinyl window, but we still get some mold in that we have to clean on a regular basis. But on the other part of the house, on the original part of the house, when I did a gut retrofit, I had learned by that time that these triple pane European style windows are much more effective at keeping that interior part of the glass at the same relative temperature as the interior of the room, and so it's less likely, as that warm, moist air from inside hits it, that it's not going to be a shock and then drop that moisture and cause a condensation. And I have that in the rest of the house, and we don't have condensation on those windows.
Yeah, it's straight up a conductivity issue. And I just want to start off by saying, Jim, I'm sorry. that you interacted with three people who didn't know that because we have an unprofessional, non-licensed carpentry or builder in the state. So that's another reason why we're interested in seeing at least certification, if not straight-up licensure for
with a continuing education requirement, because the certifications that we carry require at least 30 credit hours or more every 3 years, which means as technology changes, you are learning how to integrate all these different technologies for the overall system so you don't make these mistakes. What was that, Chris?
I was just saying, let him talk.
What they do is they go to Lowe's or Home Depot and see a new window and buy it and bring it home and install it.
Yeah, that's what we want to stop.
Can I ask you one more question?
Absolutely.
Yes, Community Action several years ago weatherized my house, and I thought they did a good job. They did that fan in the door, and I got 80 or 85% efficiency. But I'm finding around the plugs now that I've moved furniture around, I've got quads in the exterior walls. And the other night, I went to plug something into one of the quads, and the cold air that's coming in around the plugs is incredible. Is there anything I can do? Can you spray foam?
Absolutely. I'm going to leave this one to Jim. Jim has a really good spiel on this.
So Jim, I did not preface this call. I did not call you before the show.
And I was asking you to call.
But this is one of the things we wanted to talk about, so great timing.
You're not a shill.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Most people think, I'm going to go down to the local hardware store, and this does not say anything bad about the hardware store, but people will say, just get these little foam gaskets and put them behind the cover plates of your receptacle or light switches, and everything will be fine. Well, let's think that through a little bit. You're putting a piece of foam over there that's going to cover 80 to 85% of the surface or the box. But there's still, you have a quad, right? So you said in that one quad box, you're going to have 12 holes where just the grounding plug goes through, the two spake parts of the receptacle. So you still have 12 more holes. The air's still going to move through there. It's not going to stop those. And so doing it right from the beginning, when you're first building a home, to make sure you're building the right choosing the right receptacle that allows for gasketed penetrations for the wires and that you actually seal it to a membrane or to the sheetrock is important under new construction, and you can address that. Under existing construction, you're a little more limited, and usually we don't like to give this advice to customers to do some of this work because there are some hazards involved. But what we have done professionally is that, yes, you can use a foam gun and a high-performance caulking. Usually, when you take off the cover plate, the sheetrock or finished material is right next to, but not seal to the actual junction box, and we'll use a high-performance caulking there that you won't see once you put the cover plate back on. When it comes to the knockouts or penetrations where the wires go through in the back of the box, then we have to go through the measure of taking the receptacle out, not disconnecting it necessarily, but taking it out and then spot foaming in those areas and then putting the receptacle back in. We have tried successfully where the box is not full of 15,000 different strands of wire. We've been able to use a non-conductive tip on the end of the foam gun and insert it past the wire to hit that better. Usually you get like an 80 to 85% reduction in air leakage. It's not perfect doing that, but it goes a long way to stop what you're talking about because once again, as we said earlier in the show, if you've got that kind of air moving through there, it's being brought in from somewhere else. Yeah. And so it's a convective pathway that's making the whole wall perform poorly.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate the show. It's a great program, and I'm going to be a devoted listener. And now I think I'll hang up and go to the liquor closet.
Okay. Well, you know what, Jim? I just had an idea. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's got to be 6 o'clock somewhere, right? So you're good on that one. Yeah. But what I'm going to propose is that Jim and I are going to grab a GoPro, and we're going to make a five-minute video on how to do that right. We'll put it up on the website in the next week or so. So if you go to the YouTube channel, House Calls Vermont YouTube channel, within 2 weeks we'll have a video showing exactly what Jim just described.
Terrific. I will be a devoted follower there, too. And as I said before, it's a really great program.
Thank you,
I'll
Jim.
I'll hang up now and somebody else get on.
We appreciate the call.
Thanks for the call.
And, you know, some of those areas, too, that we're looking at, you know, one of the things we were going to get to is, well, I'm being told we're right at the time for a break, so we're going to get to that after we come back. So if you would, feel free to call in at 802-244-1777 or 877-291-8255 with any of the questions you have regarding your home, and we'll join you on the other side of the break.
At Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems, they specialize in all things basement-y. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems is the leading basement waterproofing, crawl space, and moisture control and foundation repair contractor in Vermont and New Hampshire. Their state-of-the-art features will help get the water out of your basement and keep your basement dry now while preventing basement leaks and flooding far into the future. Let them weatherize your drafty crawl spaces and basements using spray foam insulation. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Systems. They specialize in all things basement-y.
This is Billy down at Hannon Home Center. Are you looking to extend your socially distant outdoor gatherings on your patio or deck this fall? Whether you're a restaurant owner or simply relaxing at home, don't let your patio give you the shivers. Come in and check out our new line of Sun Heat electric and propane patio heaters. Bask in the warmth of Sun Heat's freestanding propane heaters or enjoy the wall or tripod mounted electric units available with remote control and Bluetooth speakers. Each heater is waterproof, dustproof, and snowproof. So if you're ready to extend the outdoor season at your restaurant, stay warm while working in the yard, or to cozy up on your home patio, come check out all of the Sun Heat electric patio heater options at Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury. Let us bring you home.
Let us take you home to Hannon Home Center, Hannon Home Center. We've got everything you'd ever want. Hannon Home Center, Hannon Home Center. Family run and known in Central Vermont.
Listen to what contractors are saying about Anderson Windows from Curtis Lumber.
We love Anderson Windows. They're very high quality windows at an affordable price.
The nice thing about Anderson Windows is the flexibility of the products.
I love the warranty on it.
We've always used Anderson Windows through Curtis Lumber. They have a great display at Curtis Lumber.
Curtis Lumber will be able to answer any of the questions.
I firmly believe in Anderson Windows. They are the best.
Learn more about Anderson Windows from the experts at Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find where at CurtisLumber.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to House Calls Vermont. And should you have any questions regarding your home improvement projects, new construction projects that you're looking to perform in the coming months, please feel free to give us a call back at 802-244-1777. And before the break, I was starting to talk about different types of trim and why it's important to air seal those, not just from an aesthetic or a profile standpoint, but also from a performance standpoint. One thing that Chris and I have done, in fact, 2 months ago, the Journal of Light Construction carried a story on this regarding using a theatrical fog machine, or if any of you are as old as I am, you might have been to a disco back in the day or a club, and they have all this fog coming out, and we will actually use one of those machines inside a home. And as we turn that on, and it fills the house completely with smoke to literally you cannot see your hand in front of your face, we then will pressurize the home. And when we pressurize the home, it'll force the air out in different spaces and shows us different areas of opportunity that at first glance, we thought everything was sealed perfectly.
Just make sure that if you're going to do this, that you tell the local neighbors and the fire department that you are doing a fog test, okay?
Not a fire test. So with that, you know, we're looking at these areas of where it is important to address leaky trim issues. A lot of times it's the baseboard. It could be door trim. It could be window trim. And one thing that we've seen the most is any trim that you usually don't look at usually gets missed from a caulking or an air sealing standpoint, because why caulk underneath the window trim? Because no one's going to lay on the floor and look up, and most people are under 6 feet tall, so who's going to look up above the window trim to see if that's air sealed or not? And there are times when we actually can have more than a quarter inch gap in between there of the trim and the wall where a lot of air does move through. Right now, we do have another call. Jim, it's a day for Jim. So Jim in Waitsfield. Jim, go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is a little off topic, but it's energy conservation related. So, a few years back, I was seriously thinking of doing a tankless water heater, and I'm thinking, you know, and our hot water heat went out. You know, it was probably almost 20 years old, and I'll start that tank. So I tried. That was back when there was somebody in Waitsfield who. There was a company in Waitsfield that was selling all that stuff. I'm going to totally forget their name. And I went to plumbers. I went to the gas company. I went to everybody. And it was like nobody could deal with it. Like, nobody, we'll put it this way, nobody could deal with it. time. There were four people in the house, two kids, two adults, and we didn't have any hot water, and nobody could deal with it. So now I'm thinking about maybe I'll do a hybrid heater.
Oh,
sure. So what is your thoughts on how to do these? I mean, you know, it's like I was thinking about it, and then all of a sudden the heater went out, but like, how much lead time do you need? I mean, for people who are thinking about that, it doesn't seem like you should wait till you don't have
till it breaks. No, exactly. That's probably not a
Jim,
good way to start.
Jim, just like the old adage that I got to experience on Thursday a couple days ago, never touch anything plumbing related on a holiday.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And I actually did on one of our half bath sinks, and I just got it repaired this morning by a local plumber because it actually the drain was slow, but then it fell apart in my hands, and we couldn't use that bathroom.
I was told that it rusted out.
It was actually corroded. So
corroded, yeah.
So, but with that, you know, when things fail, usually it's the most inopportune time. But with that, I would say that Efficiency Vermont is an excellent resource through their EEN network of contractors who deal in heat pumps, whether it's the heat pumps for heating and cooling inside the home, or it happens to be the hybrid hot water tanks. And Chris, I know you have one, I have one. What are your thoughts on the hybrid?
So there are some things you have to keep in mind when you're dealing with how you want to heat your hot water. Hybrid hot water heaters are great. It's a heat pump hot water heater that also has an electric element in it, so it can find the best efficiencies. Obviously, the heat pump is going to be more efficient, but what it's doing is it's stealing that heat from the room that it's in. So you need to make sure you have a minimum of a 10 by 10 room or a smaller room that has got a slatted door, like one of those
louvered door.
Yeah, well, it would be in our basement, which is the heat is in the basement. It's pretty well insulated, but it's warm. It's not as warm as the upstairs part of the house.
Okay, well, if you put in a hybrid heat pump hot water heater, it will cool down a bit.
Yeah.
Unless you switch it over to straight up electric. There are some other really cool systems that are out there. There's a straight up heat pump hot water heater called a Sandin, which they're giving subsidies for. That's an air to water hot water heater.
What was the name of it?
Sandin, S-A-N-D-E-N. I'll put a link on the... Okay.
You can find it on the 475 High Performance building website. Just look up 475 High Performance, and you'll find their website, and you can navigate to their page.
And this is a unit that looks very much like the outdoor unit for a heat pump. It's got a kind of a suitcase-sized box,
and
it sits outside, and that is, I think, it's hitting something like 400% efficient. The ability of the difference is that it won't cool off the space that it's in. So, but it is quite a pricey place to start. They're very, very good. But a quick swap out would be the hybrid hot water heater.
And with that, Jim, there are rebates still available for those units. And the one that I had installed in my home, this was multiple years ago, I did it and because I have a fire wood stove in the basement, so it was an excellent opportunity to capture some of that heat anyway and help heat the hot water, which you don't have to have that, but it was just...
We call that a parasitic load,
yes.
Right, where something's stealing from something else.
But with that, what I've noticed is that with a family of four and sometimes five or six, that unit was installed as a 40-gallon unit. Other people are now recommending that you go with an 80-gallon unit because the recovery time, it doesn't mean they're not going to work at 40 gallons, but your recovery time is longer. So it's just something to keep in mind when you're having this installed.
So
I think we have a 50 at this point.
There you go. I've got a 50. It's perfectly good for one person to have a bath, but then you're washing dishes and you're like, oh, it's getting kind of lukewarm.
Yeah.
I would have rather have gotten the 80. It's not a big increase in the cost. And I would agree with that. So another important thing to keep in mind if you want to put in the hybrid hot water heater is you need two 15-amp circuits in your jumper box, in your electrical box, to service that. If you already have an electric hot water heater, that's a straight swap out because it's using actually less electricity than a straight-up electric resistance hot water heater.
And with anything, you've got to make sure you vacuum out your dust collector because that can make it work harder and be more strenuous.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jim. I hope that helps.
If you
have any follow-up questions, please send an email to housecallsvt@gmail.com. And we have Rich in Starksboro. Rich, how can we help you?
Good afternoon, guys. I really try to be on topic with my questions, but I have to apologize. I want to ask you a question, something even more off topic than what Jim...
All right, as long as it's not politics, we're good.
My favorite color is blue.
Okay. I had an underground fuel storage tank removed back in September, and I ask the contractor to come in and tell me what I should do with the tubing that's in there. It's like two pipe system, return and whatever input, you know, back and forth, whatever, return and flow, whatever they call it.
Yeah, one is a supply and one is a bleed, because when you're filling an oil tank, you need somewhere for the extra air to go.
Right. And so I said, what should I do? Well, he said you could leave them there, but I thought, well, I kind of want to sell this home, and I thought, well, I'll get them right out of there. So I took a grinder and I cut them off, and I kind of punched them in there where it's exposed, and a lot of it goes under the concrete. Mm-hmm. So I mortared up where it was, and I mortared up on the where it comes back down into the floor, goes under the concrete, and within a few hours, the fuel oil started seeping into the mortar as it was drying, and it's still seeping in there. And so what I thought is what I should have done is maybe cut it off with about 2 inches and rolled it up and crimped it.
Yeah, something like
then
that.
Then mortared it or pounded it in. But since I cut it off kind of deep inside with the grinder, what are your thoughts? What I've done now is I found some varnish that was minerals, you know, oil-based, because I figured the oil would work with it. So I used mineral spirits to clean off the surface, and I put 2 coats of varnish on it, and the smell has gone down. I'm thinking maybe I'm going to rub some, I got a concrete rubbing stone and put some more mortar on and kind of rub it in, and maybe cover that varnish up and let it go from there. But what are your thoughts on that, what I could have done, or if you have any? It might be kind of out of your area of expertise, but I just wanted to run it by you.
Well, I'd start out by saying whoever you contracted to take that tank out did not bleed the rest of the lines, and that is on him. Mm-hmm. That he left you with what's basically a toxic spill.
Anything over 2 gallons of spilled fuel oil is considered a hazardous waste situation by the state, and so you got to be really careful there. And so what I usually tell people, if a job is worth doing, it's worth doing right.
Yep.
And if you're going to do this, you ask what could have been done. He should have recommended to go the full way to get all the infrastructure out of there, so you wouldn't have any lingering issues that could affect the sale of the home, could affect the toxicity,
the health and safety.
I mean,
this is actually. Yeah. I mean, if you're smelling that, you're smelling all kinds of stuff that we're not supposed to be smelling on a regular basis.
Yeah, what I did was before I had him come, I ran the fuel dry in the tank.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not been that much of a leak, maybe like 3 teaspoons.
Oh, okay. So
is it a poured concrete foundation or a rubble stone foundation?
It's a cement block.
Cement block, okay.
Cement block.
Is it, I would say, I'm not sure how deep it is outside. I would think that it might still
about
be worthwhile.
2 feet down.
Yeah, so I would think that that's still, during the springtime, would still be something worthwhile to address by extricating the rest of the actual infrastructure of that.
Yep, I would agree. Yeah. And
I watched them crimp it underground in the part that's dangling under in the dirt. That end is crimped where the end that went to the tank.
Sure.
You crimped that all in. So I just wanted to get the whole, that extraneous fuel out of the fuel line out of the basement, so people wouldn't wonder what's this.
What
for,
the heck is it?
Yeah.
Well, this is actually out of our wheelhouse. What we're saying is just what we would think of doing, but I would get a professional involved.
And at the very least, if you do go to sell your home, of course you have to disclose these type of items, and so we don't want to hinder the sale for you or be something that they were going to want money back to address it themselves. So that's why we're recommending that.
Yeah, but one of the things I was thinking of taking the mortar out and then putting like some kind of oil-resistant RTV type stuff to seal it off.
Yep.
But I was looking at it. It says clean all the oil off.
Right. And you can't because it's still seeping. Yeah. So I don't know if you're still in contact with the person who did the removal. You might want to start there. Or if not, I would look at another fuel removal person, someone who's an expert at that type of thing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it kind of handling my question, but
sure.
I'll be back on topic next time I call.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's fine. And if you have any questions in between, feel free to send us an email at housecallsvt@gmail.com.
Well, geez, Chris, that hour went by quicker than I expected.
Jim, you wrote three pages. We're only a page and a half in. Joe, can we get another hour?
He's saying yes. But with that, you know, we've had some really great calls, and that's what we're here for. We're here for the listening audience. And so as many of you that want to call in, please do. We're more than happy to get you the answers that you're looking for. And if we don't know, we'll be honest. And we're going to come back, and we're going to get that information that you're looking for so that you don't, on the other side of this, end up having a professional in your home later and saying, well, you should have done it this way.
Yep.
You know, we want to make sure that those accidents or mishaps are avoided up front and you get the best performing home, the safest home, and the most durable home possible.
I do want to throw out there, once again, our email, housecallsvt@gmail.com. You can send us email at any time and we'll respond. And go to our YouTube channel at House Calls Vermont on YouTube. Just type in YouTube, type in House Calls Vermont, and you'll get us. We have a couple of videos on there. Some of them are answers to some of the email questions we had. Like and subscribe, and we're building our membership and our listenership. We're all so happy that you guys like our show. We're having a great time, and we feel like we're fulfilling that mission that we feel very desperately about helping people with their problems and giving them professional and well-thought-out and building science-based answers.
And home construction and renovation problems. Let's be specific there.
I'll answer questions about anything. I may not have any idea what I'm talking about, but I'll say something. Okay, thank you guys very much. Until next week, this is Chris West.
And Jim Bradley.
For House Calls Vermont.
House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive in Waterbury. Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, shamrockpaintingcompany.com. R.K. Miles, your neighborhood lumberyard, with new locations now in Barrie, Montpelier, St. Johnsbury, and Waitsfield. Buy Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber, with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at curtislumber.com. Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basementy. Home Builders and Remodelers Association Vermont at homebuildersvt.com. And Poly Construction in South Burlington. One call does it all, online at polyconstruction.com.